football on Off the Ball.
They can no longer dominate the ball, and the fear factor from City is gone, but they'll still finish second or third.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
And you are welcome to another episode of Settle In on Off the Ball. I'm John Duggan, and Settle In is brought to you by Guinness 0.0. We're delighted to welcome into studio Mary Nolan Hickey today. How are you, Mary?
I'm okay, actually. Well, I could be better, but I'm okay.
A lot of injury. And the reason why you might have a lot of injury, Mary, is because you are the only woman in this country who's run every single Dublin Marathon since 1980.
Yes, indeed I am.
When I just give that fact out, do you have to pinch yourself sometimes when you think about that?
Definitely. It's like life gets in the way every year, and you just turn up to the start line, and before you know it, you're 20 years in, and then you're 30 years in. So it's kind of snuck up on me, but I'm amazed myself that I've managed to get to the start line every year. I'm absolutely amazed. There's only about 10 of us left now.
You're from Arklow?
Arklow, County Wicklow.
You should never, I know in life, ask someone their age, but because of this milestone, are you okay to say what age you are?
I am 73.
Wow.
Yeah, but I'm running since 1968, so I'm 57 years actually in athletics. And then someone invented the Dublin City Marathon, and I went to the start line for the first one, and that was the beginning of it. But it was never a plan to be still here so many years later.
What was 1980 like then? Ireland was very different back then.
Oh, it was very different. Literally, I entered it. I just filled in a form back then, and I entered it. I did not know what I'd really entered. I'd only done one long run, an 18-miler from Tinnehealy to Arklow, and I had to go into a field and get myself together and nearly cry to get this thing finished. So I went to the start line in Dublin that year in 1980, not knowing how I was going to get to the finish. But there was only 40 women in it and less than 2,000 people on the day. It was like a war zone, to be honest with you. The water was, I think it might have even been in glasses. I don't know. There was no watches. There was no sponges. There was no fancy stuff. It was just get yourself through 26.2 miles. We always ran in miles back then. I still run in miles, yeah.
Where was the circuit then?
Do you know, everyone asks me that every year. I always say, I don't have to worry. I just follow whoever's in front of me. Changed over the years. I used to go out by Raheny. I liked it when it went out there. Some people found that very tough, but I liked it out there. We had Dick Cooper. That was his country. So it was lovely to see Dick Cooper winning three times, you know, and I liked it out there. It was chilly and out that end of the country sometimes because you're so near the coast, but it was lovely. But I loved the Phoenix Park as well.
Is it a hilly track, a hilly terrain when you're doing the Dublin Marathon, or is it pretty flat?
Dublin, it's a good course. It wouldn't necessarily be the easiest of courses, but I think it's a fair course. And my God, the crowds, without the people out on the course, it would be a hell of a day out. But the crowds in Dublin are unreal. I've done Boston, I've done London, but somehow or other Dublin's a bit special.
When did you start feeling, I want to do this every year?
I never started to feel I wanted to do it every year. But for the first years, I was very competitive. You know, I mean, I've done sub 3 hours. I've never been coached, but I'm competitive. So I was always running to try and do a certain time for the first 5, 10, maybe even 15 years. But up and around into when I get up around the 20th year, someone actually said to me, you know, there's only 2 women left that have done them all since it started. Now, I would never have known that. And it was Bridget McCabe from Mullingar, the great Bridget McCabe, who's still flying around, not doing marathons, but flying around. And myself, and I kind of thought, well, okay, now what'll happen next? And then on the 21st year, I think it was Bridget didn't go to the start line. Her husband was injured, and she decided that was it. That's me done. And I got to the finish line, and someone said, did you see Bridget? And I said, no, she didn't pass me. I didn't pass her. I don't know. I didn't see Bridget. I said, no, she didn't run. And it was like, okay, now I am the only woman. And that's when I made a mistake, because I said, I wonder how many men are left. That was my mistake. I should have said, right, that's it now, you should just stop. But I just thought, and it was about 40 or 50 men then. But now our little band has come down to about 10 people. Well, as I say, we're just all getting, I'm wrecked. But the youngest man is 15 years younger than me, Martin Kelly from Raheny. Lad will be going for a good few years yet, but I think my shoes need to be hung up very soon.
You're in an exclusive group then. Are y'all friends then with the lads?
Well, I know them, man. Yeah. We don't meet up too often. We meet up at the start line and we don't see each other at the finish line because we're all finishing at different times. But you meet them at the start line and all you can do is wish everyone well and hope to God they can keep going because we were a bigger band. It's a joke, I know, but I often say we're not dropping out anymore. We're dropping dead, some of us. So it is, it's tough to be. It's a club that we're in. Nobody can join it. Once you leave it, you're out. You can't go back.
No.
It's a funny little club. But being as I'm the only woman, I think my time to hand in my membership.
Could this be the last one possibly then?
I think so. Possibly, yes, because I have piled up a few injuries. I need a new hip. I could do a new knee. I have a frozen shoulder. So I never like to whinge about it, but the body has decided you're done. My head wants to keep going. But definitely the body is going, you've done enough.
Well, you're hale and hearty, you have to say. So throughout your life, so from, say, 1968 until now, I mean, what have you been doing? Would you be running every day? Would you be doing lots of different sports? I mean, how would you have kept your fitness up over the years?
I love my running. I've never been that regimental. I trained very consistently in the early days, very consistently. Sometimes I'd have to go out at 11:30 at night because I had two small kids at the time and my husband had two jobs. So the only time you could get out could be 11:30 at night, which was fine. You just run out in the country because I live in Arklow. It was a lot of countryside then, not so much now. But then I'd done a bit of rowing and I've done a bit of racquetball. I like other sports as well and I love travel. And I got into mountain running and I went and ran the Sahara, stupid things like that, and done a few 100K races. Some of the stuff I've done probably did give the old body a ride, all rattling. Like I ran around the whole coast of Ireland in 2018. That was amazing. That was absolutely an amazing trip. I did it for the RNLI and we raised about 80,000 or 90,000 even euros. But my God, the people I met on that course going around the coast of Ireland was just fantastic, you know.
Where did you start when you did that?
I started in Arklow on the 1st of January, 1918. And people said, why did you go in the winter, Mary? Why are you taking off in the winter? And I said, well, look, the RNLI, when they get a call out, it doesn't matter what the weather's doing, they can't say I'm not going, it's raining. So I said, I'd go in the winter. Another reason I went into winter because there'd be less tourists on the road, you know, because I didn't have a team with me. I was on my own, mostly on the road. And I said, another thing is, if I'm looking for somewhere to stay, it'll be cheaper. There'll be more accommodation available. But it turned out I didn't have to look. My little backup team were in Arklow, but they weren't with me. And they sourced, oh my God, did they source places for me to stay? I was looked after like a celebrity.
You start off in 2018. And how much would you run or exercise each day before you maybe stop and stay overnight and then go again?
Well, my plan wasn't very technical. I just threw a map out on the table with a pen and I started marking. I just went to Arklow, Greystones, Holt, Skerries, and then I lost a will to live and I stopped drawing circles and a few people came behind me and started plotting for me. So day one, I went from Arklow to Greystones, which is approximately 50K. And day two, I went Greystones to Holt, I think it was. Holt to Skerries. Skerries to Claverhead and so on and so forth.
Running. Did you have any companions with you or on your own?
No, I set off on my own. That was the plan because if you're doing something like that, you need to do it your own way. You can't, you know, other people, you don't want anyone putting you under pressure. You have to do it yourself. This is the way I look at it anyway. And it was thoroughly enjoyable, but I was joined the whole way around some days by people who came out to run with me. I was joined with people from every county and some people had never ran as far in their lives as they did on that day with me. And they went on to do marathons because they said, I'm after doing 19 miles here today and I never thought I'd do 19 miles. We were just running at a nice, easy pace. My plan was run easy, walk up all the big hills. So yeah. It worked. It worked. I just about was on the edge of my physical ability. I was about to turn to pension age, so I was trying to get it done before I had to get my pension. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And it was hard, don't get me wrong, it was very hard. And I had all the weather you could possibly get, storms, the whole lot. But there was something about it, it was very uplifting every day, even though some days were hell. And when I'd get to the finish, I'd finish at an RNLI station. And believe you me, if you finish at an RNLI, the welcome you get, doesn't matter how exhausted you are, you're suddenly lifted again. And the engineer always wants to show you the lifeboat. So you have to go downstairs to the cold room, shake for about 10 minutes and look at the lifeboat. And then you're off to wherever you're staying and you just sleep and relax and charge everything you need to charge.
How long did it take for you to the island?
I think I was 104 days on the road, 104 days out. But my team in Arca kept insisting I take the odd day off, which I had about 4 or 5 days that I didn't run. They were the harder days because I had to do a lot of media stuff. You know, there was people phoning me from this place and that place to chat to me, and I had to go visit schools and things. So they were nearly the harder days. The running days were almost easy. Almost, I say. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't easy.
Just over 3 months. So what did you learn about Ireland's landscape when you were doing that?
Oh my God, it's the most beautiful place. Literally the Antrim coast, right up around Mallon, down to Mizzen, all along West Coast. Everywhere was just beautiful. But one thing I didn't like was every time I stopped to look at a view, I saw rubbish. In the you know, literally kitchen sinks and bathrooms and doors. And that was very disappointing to see so much rubbish on our beautiful, beautiful coastline. So we really need to start taking care of it because it's our big, one of our biggest assets, I think, our coastline.
Interesting to talk about the, you know, at a certain age and the limitations to your body. But say when you were in your 30s, you were running under 3 hours. So did you really feel that you were on top of marathon running at the time?
To be honest, I didn't even think about it that day that I did break the 3 hours. This was before Garmins were invented.
Yeah.
I had trained very well. There was a girl in my own town called Mary Snell who was a very good runner. And Mary had been training really well. And we were always very competitive in that when we were back in the day in the club. And Mary was training really well. And on the day, the start of that marathon, it was the second Dublin marathon, I just said, look, my name's Mary as well, obviously. I said, Mary, you just have to go out now and do your best. Whatever you do, don't look back. If Mary catches you, she catches you. But you're going to try so damn hard to stay ahead. It was like a little competition between two girls from Arklow. So I literally, Mary was about 4 minutes behind me and I ran a perfect marathon. I ran a negative split. I ran the second half a little bit faster than the first half. But I remember when I got the halfway, I said, you kick on now because if Mary's coming, this is where she's going to get you. It's just natural. If you're competitive, you kind of know what you have to do. And I kicked on. And seemingly for about 19 miles, I was third woman, but I didn't know that. And the radio was going, Mary Nolan Hickey from Arklow is third, but they knew nothing else about me. But it was three Dublin City Harrier girls that got first, second and third, and I finished fourth. It was great, great.
Does a lot go through your head when you're running a marathon?
Yeah, it does. But you have to zone in and you have to realise you're going to have bad patches. You're going to have patches where you think, I just can't keep this up. But if you've trained enough, and I'm saying enough, not fantastic necessarily, just enough. If you have enough in the tank and you've done your long runs, you'll get through it. It's a strange one. It's a strange one. It really is. But yeah, your head is busy, but you have to keep talking positive to yourself. You have to be positive. If you let the negativity in, it can just floor you.
Is there such a thing as hitting a wall in a marathon?
I have to say, I've never hit the wall. I've had bad patches, but I've never felt as though I can't do this, except up to this year now, but I don't know what's going to happen this year. But I've had bad ones, I've had slow ones, I've had good ones, but I have never felt as though I won't get this done. On the bad patches, you just have to kind of zone into yourself, maybe slow down a little bit, take a couple of deep breaths, have a chat with yourself. It's just, in my mind, it's just a long day out. It's like a day's work. It's a day where you're not working. You're out doing what you love doing. You're doing the marathon. So, look, if anyone out there now is worried about their marathon and maybe they've only ran 12 or 15 miles, you can do the marathon. It depends on whether you want a big time. If you want it, there's only a few hundred that want a time, really. After that, people
just
want to do it.
This is about running within yourself and knowing your pace.
Knowing your pace. Pace, it's all about pace. It literally is. Now, I'd set off at a pace on average that I would want to finish at, if you get me. I'd set off, say, like these last couple, good few years, I'm only in and around the 5 hours or whatever, or maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I was under 4 hours, under three. I've gone from under three, like literally right up. But each time you know what you're hoping to get out of your body. and you go out at that pace, maybe a little better, but you definitely don't go out hard. You go out steady and you build it and you build it. And you sometimes you'll just kick in and you'll be going better than you ever thought you would.
The people who go hard sometimes don't make it then?
No. Pace at the start is right up to the top guys. If you overdo it at the start, if you don't do the pace you know you've trained for, if you go, I've seen guys train very hard for the whole year, but they've gone by me looking at watches going, oh my God, I'm 30 seconds off my pace. I just feel like saying, would you chill out, guys? You'll get that back. Because they're hopping over people to try and pull back the time they think they've lost. If they would just relax, stay steady, work your way in, you'd probably finish much better than you thought you would.
How does training obviously differ then when you get older for maybe older runners of the Dublin Marathon this year? You're in your 70s. I mean, how do you run a marathon in your 70s?
Well, running this year hasn't happened for me, unfortunately. I'm on a couple of lists. I'm on a list for a hip replacement, but I think I've still got the ability from start line to finish line this year. I'm doing it for the Kidney Association, so I have a reason to run. It's nice to have a reason to run. There's a lot of women in my age that are in great nick, but some of them didn't start till later in life. I'm at this game since I was 16, so this body has done as much as I think I can get it to do. But my plan always was to push it and push it until it stops. But I'm still in good form. Mentally, my head still wants to run a half-decent marathon. My body's going, forget it. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So it's a head game. But 90% of getting through your marathon is mental. As I say, you'd nearly have to be mental to be doing one. But 90% of your day out is, don't go to the start line with an if. Don't go to the start line and say, I'll see how I feel. I'll see how I feel when I get to halfway. I'll see how I feel, because you will not feel good. But if you go to the start line saying, whatever happens, happens from start, I'll get to the finish line. If you see in your head that you're going to finish, no matter what training you've done, you probably will finish. But if you're full of self-doubt about, oh, I don't think I can do this, you probably won't be able to do it. So you have to just change your mindset. It's a day out. You have probably nearly 8 hours in that day from start to finish. Obviously, if you want to win the damn thing, you're going to have to go hell for leather and race it. But there's only probably about maybe 10% of the people that'll be on the start line that are fighting for a big time. The rest are, maybe they have times in their head, which is good. Some of them, it'll be their first marathon. You shouldn't have a time in your head, really, if it's your first marathon, unless you're in a club, you know. But if you're just your average person who went through the marathon, don't mind anyone saying, what time are you going to do? Just say, I'm hoping to get to the finish. And get to the finish, you'll be so proud of yourself.
It is a great achievement and incredible what you've done over 45 years, Mary. is a marathon tough over time on the joints?
Do you know,
because I sometimes hear people say, run on grass, don't run on roads.
No. See, when I was very, very young, I was regarded as a brittle bone child. I broke my leg twice before I ever ran a step in school. I fell over this, I fell over that. I was regarded as a delicate little one. Don't let Mary do that. Don't let Mary do this. At 16, I started into athletics, and I needn't tell you, 57 years later, the running hasn't done this to my body. Time has, and some of the stuff I've done, which is a little bit out of the ordinary, has took its effect on. But I think I've a touch of osteoarthritis, but I think a lot of people at 73 have a touch of osteoarthritis. I would rather see what this body can do now going forward than give up.
Have you ever tested your biological age versus your actual age? Because sometimes you hear that with people that are older than their. I'm sure you feel that you're probably younger than your age.
Yeah. Well, I've never been into all the technical stuff.
Yes.
But I would have done fitness assessments and things like that, and I would have always come out as superior for my age in treadmill tests and tests like that. But I haven't been. I have to admit, I haven't been. One of these clean eating athletes. I'm very fond of my food. I'm very fond of my rubbish. I probably have about a stone and a half on me that I shouldn't have on me. You know, I haven't lived one of those clean athletic lifestyles. I don't drink now and I never smoked.
Okay.
But can I eat? Let's put it that way.
So 1980, did you find that there was a less than charitable attitude towards your gender being a marathon runner?
Oh God, yes. Oh, yes. Because I was doing a few races before 1980, and you'd go to the start line of a race, and the guys would look at you and say, what are you doing here? And you'd be in the race, and you'd hear them in the back saying, I don't want to be chicked. That's what they just to hate a woman or a girl passing them by. But I wasn't trying to beat them. I was chasing the likes of Emily Dowling up the road as fast as I could, but I'd never catch them. So it was Emily and the likes of her, which were the brilliant athletes back in the day, that I would be chasing. But you would get that attitude, like, I used to hate being beaten by a girl, but over the years, and it did take a long time for it
when
to change.
When did it change?
I'd say it took nearly 10 years for it to begin to change, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, there was only 40 women in the first one, and I remember the second one, I was staying in the Montclair Hotel, and my husband Tony, who had done 38 marathons in a row as well, was there, and there was a gang of guys at the breakfast table, and I was the only female at the breakfast table. Now, I was 27 or 8, but I probably looked a lot younger, and the lads were all talking about, well, what time are you hoping to do, and what time are you hoping to do, and we're all talking 3-4-5. And one fellow turned to me and he says, and are you here to support your husband? And I said, no, actually, I'm here to run. But I didn't realise it was so odd back then. And he says, oh, really? And what time are you hoping to do? Well, I said, well, I did sub 3 hours last year. Well, that brought the table to silence. But we were an oddity back then, and people would, like, I used to go out running in my town in the winter. I'd be out coming up the road running with just a shorts and a vest on. And I remember one day hearing these women ahead of me talking, and here she comes, and you wouldn't put a milk bottle out in it. You know, people found it like you're doing something wrong as a female to be out running, you know, but now it's totally changed. The guys now have huge respect for the women. And some of the good guys who are looking for a good time, they'll get in behind the top women and try and hang on to them for dear life, because they're going to go better than them.
Well, thankfully, being brought out of the dark ages has also helps that we've had likes of Sonia Sullivan, Catriona McKiernan, such stars in the international stage.
Yeah, oh, it's brilliant. It's come. Women's sport is 50-50 now, if not maybe even more than 50-50 in any event you go to. In some races, I actually look around and go, there seems to be more women in this race than men, which is brilliant, just brilliant. It's great to see it has come so far.
How did you run a marathon when you're pregnant?
You know, I was very fit. I wouldn't be stupid. I was very fit at the time. And I remember thinking, when I realised I was pregnant, I remember counting up on my fingers, pushing my luck here. Because then, back and then, my son is 38 years of age. Back then, you wouldn't have ran when you're pregnant. And I had entered, and I came to collect my number at the registration. I think it was, I don't know which woman was behind the counter, one of the girls I know, and she's looking at me as if, because of a little bump going on here, she's looking at me, and I'm going, I put my finger up and say nothing. I said, I'm going to be taking it very hand, and I did. I had a great day out. I was fully dressed. I had that much clothes on. It was ridiculous. I stopped, knocked on doors to go to the loo now and then. And at the finish line, seemingly, someone had announced if Mary Hickey gets past Hollis Reach, she should be able to finish, which I did. And, you know, I took my time. It was around 5-6 hours, which I'm only able to do now. So I was fine. I had a big 10.5-pound baby. So it was grand.
You've had a few, like we've all had loss, but you've had some tough times. Mary, you've had some tragedies.
I surely have, yes. We lost our lovely son, Stuart. And I remember when we lost Stuart, he was only 20, giving himself a bit of a hard time, but he was, like anyone would say, he was an adorable young man, really. But we lost him when he was 20. And I just remember thinking, I'm probably never going to run again. I'm probably never going to smile again. I'm probably never going to feel any happiness again. Because when you lose your firstborn child, you are only someone who's lost maybe a child would know the feeling. You just feel as though your whole world has just collapsed. And I remember another friend of mine, she had lost, I forget which way she lost, I think it was an accident, and she'd accidentally ran over her sister's child, backed into it, And she phoned me the day after and says, Mary, can I come up? She lived down the country. I won't give any names. Can I come up? I need to go for a run. This girl was a much better runner than me, let me tell you. She came up to Arklow and we went for a run. I think 10 miles later, I was hanging onto her coattails, trying to keep with her because she was talking. It was therapy. She was talking and I was running with her and I said, I can't tell her, I can't keep going, I have to keep going. And I kept going with her for that day and she didn't come up to go for a run, she came up to talk and let it all out. Now, when I started in athletics in 1968, I did not realise how much running would mean to me. So after I lost Stuart, I got back training. I actually went for a run a couple of days later.
What happened to him?
God love him. I was actually off at an athletics meet and he was looking after my youngest son, Calvin. And my neighbour down the road was helping them as well. And he literally ran down the road with Calvin on his shoulders before I left the house that morning. And I just thought, look, that's a lovely scene. You know, I could see them running down the road to the house, my neighbour's house, left Calvin there, got sick in the bed, choked, which was very tragic, and died, literally. I was in Tullamore running. I came home, I got a phone call. Thank God there was no mobiles back then. Got to the end, beginning of my estate, and someone told me what had happened. I nearly took the car I was in asunder. That was my reaction. I just went into a screaming fit. But another part of the big tragedy, it was my son Calvin, who was only very young at the time, had come back down the road to my house, four doors away from my neighbours, to get Stuart to put batteries in a toy. So it was my youngest son who found him, which is it's very hard. You know, I brought Calvin to therapy, the whole lot, but he's coping, but like he's living with that. He's living with it. And he's only a child. So yeah, a lot of tragedy, but I actually think you either go down or you go up, you know?
The death of a child and what you've described to Calvin there is unmanageable.
It is actually.
Here in the way you're speaking, Mary.
But then I have met other people who've had terrible, terrible tragedies in their life. Some people, you have to figure out how am I going to live now? How do I go forward? And my decision was, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing and just try and keep going forward. And I found training so beneficial. You go out for a 20-mile run and everything that's bothering you, by the time you get home, you've sorted a lot out in your head. And I lost a brother to esophagus cancer at 27 and his passing was horrific. And I remember a doctor in the hospital in James Street saying to a nurse, she's going to need something, because I was with my brother for a lot of time before he passed, Michael. And he came over to me and he said, will you need something, you know, for yourself? I said, no. I said, I'm going to go for a run. And he says, cheaper than Prozac and much better for you. So I find it was never why I started running. I started as a teenager. But I think it should be prescribed, to be honest. Exercise, or any kind of exercise, dancing, whatever.
What you're describing is unfathomable, I think, to a lot of people, Mary, and your strength really comes through in the way you're speaking. And it is maybe some small way of managing devastating grief.
It is. And because I've met so many wonderful people through athletics over my life, I've met lifelong friends. I have a walking group in Arklow, older ladies now, just walking. And the crack we have is brilliant. But I mean, it's not, I would love it to be still running, but my body now won't run. Well, I can't make it run. So, but I'm still involved in sport and I think I always will be. And if this is my last marathon, I'll be up next year standing behind the counter handing out T-shirts or medals. You know, you can volunteer.
You see a lot of people on smartphones now. You see a lot of kids not exercising.
Oh, I feel so sorry for them. I actually feel so sorry for the young people these days. If they could get into some kind of sport, it doesn't have to even be sport. It could be singing or dancing or painting or something other than these flipping smartphones. I don't know whether it's true or not, but I think they're all being destroyed by social media. It's just horrible. Unfortunately, that's the way I feel about it. I think it's very sad. My son Calvin, who is 38 now, when he was about 12, mobile phones came out, and he said to me, I remember saying, Calvin, will you go on Facebook? And he said to me, no, Ma. He said, I will never be on Facebook. And I said, why not, honey? He said, this is the most dangerous thing to be put in the hands of normal people. They will not be able to handle it. This is going to be too powerful. And he was 12, and he was right.
When you talk about the loss of Stuart, your son, and your brother as well to cancer, would your life have been different if you hadn't had running in dealing, you know, with the aftermath?
Big
was
person.
Running a way through the darkness?
Yes, definitely a way through the darkness. Definitely. But it was never, as I always say to people, it's never the reason I started running.
No.
But it definitely helps. I actually think that if more doctors would say to people, go and join a walking group, go and join a running group, go and join a dance group, go and do something that's not inside your four walls, that's outside, out in the fresh air, or in a room with other people. I don't think people are talking enough anymore to each other. I really don't.
Is there a fulfillment in every run?
Lovely fulfillment. The 20-mile runs used to be great because, my God, the last 5 miles, all you want to do is get home, maybe get a bath and get a cup of tea and have brown bread and jam. You know, that's all that was on your head. But going out the road, you were probably this worry and that worry and this bill and that bill. They're gone. They're gone by the time you're finished. But now I'm getting the same bit of a buzz out of just walking.
Yes.
Which is surprising me. It's taken me too long, mind you. I'll be probably walking this marathon. I don't think I can afford to risk running because I think if I try to run, I mightn't finish.
Is there a do's and don'ts list for people maybe preparing for their first marathon, Mary, even in the preparation?
A lot of people will probably not have done as much training as they would have hoped. Time goes by so quickly. You get this 12-week plan and 4 or 5 weeks of that, you can't do anything because there's a wedding or something happening. If you've done, as I say, if you've done 12 to 15 miles even, no matter what pace, don't worry. You can still get the marathon done. It literally is. You're going to have all the people clapping you. You're going to have the drinks out there. You're going to have thousands of other people trying to do the same thing on the day. It's not like going out for your lonely long run on your own on a winter's night. You're going to have support. You're going to have people willing you to the finish line. So I think for anyone who's beginner or hasn't ran for maybe hasn't done enough training and you have an entry for the Dublin Marathon, unless you've got something seriously wrong with you, like a really serious injury, get to the start line. You'll enjoy it. Get to the finish line.
The Irish Life Dublin Marathon is on the 26th of October this year, Mary, 2025. I think one investment people should make in this is a good pair of running shoes. Would you agree?
Yeah, a decent pair of running shoes. They don't have to be the state-of-the-art Yokies that they're all flying around in that are nearly barred. I've never, ever worn them. I'd break my neck. They're so high off the ground. Like, when I started, I was in flat shoes, cheapest cheapy things. But a decent pair of runners, yeah. A decent pair of runners on your feet. Most important.
The marathon is one thing. What's the most adventurous thing? You've talked about the Sahara. Was that the most adventurous thing you ever did?
The Sahara was interesting. I'd done a couple of 100K races as well. I remember getting a phone call saying, Mary, will you run 100K for Ireland? And I had to ask the person who phoned me. I said, what is 100K? Because I only ever ran in miles. I said, well, it's about 62 miles. I said, okay, well, how long have I got to think about this? This was before mobiles. I was a big old phone in the hall. And he said, well, I need to know by tomorrow. I said, okay then. And it was in Holland. We had to pay for everything ourselves, the flights. The only thing we got free was a vest and a shorts that probably didn't fit us properly. And as an Irish team, we were going to set up our station and we were carrying our cardboard box with our bits and pieces in it to a table. The Americans were on one side and I think the Canadians were on the other side and they had people that are called feeders, giving them their stuff as they went around. We had nobody. So as the day went on, it was 100K, it was 10K loops. And I just, in my head, I said, Mary, it's only 10 laps. No matter what way, it's 10 laps, 10K laps. All the people at the other tables had gotten to know the Irish team coming around and they'd leave their table and come over to help us. open up things for us. First time I ever tasted gel was at this thing. Someone had dropped out, so their gels were there on our table. And I had nearly got sick, needn't tell you, because they're sticky things, but they do work. I remember coming to the last 10K and I said, right, Mary, only one more lap now. And I went in across this area that you go past with your thing on your shoe, and off I went, and the Irish team were waiting for me, and they knew what time I should come in at, but because I knew it was last lap, I'd come in quicker, and they missed me, so they thought I had dropped out and I was probably in a medical tent somewhere. When I finished, there was nobody there to pick me up. I literally had to crawl myself to a massage place to try and get the body working. So I loved all that, but the most adventurous thing I've done is as I called it, the lap of the map, the lap of Ireland. That was just outstanding.
So the RNLI, yeah.
RNLI lap of the map.
Are endorphins a real thing when you do this running?
They are. Yeah, they are. Cheaper than Prozac, as they say.
Yeah.
And just as good.
What about anybody who feels, you know what, this has passed me by, I'm of a certain age now. Is it never too late?
I don't think it is, actually. If you have the physicality and you have a half-decent pair of legs under you and a good heart and the head... I have, over the years, I have trained people for marathons. People have come to me and they should never, ever drop a little seed into my mind. I'd love to do a marathon. That's the worst thing you can say to me, because I'll say, well, would you really like to do one? And then I'll start them. And every person I have ever trained has got to the finish line. And I'm not a coach, but I know how to build them up. I know, they always say, Mary, we need you to record. We need to record your voice to bring with us. I said, no, you done that run, not me. You did it.
You're planting a seed in my head, Mary. I might have to do my, I've never done a marathon.
Do you do a bit?
I do a lot of walking, hill walking and that. But yeah, maybe I need to do this and
get, do one.
Do one,
just
maybe.
Do one. I don't think it's for everyone. I don't think everyone should be doing marathons, to be honest. I think it's too hard.
Mm.
I think 5K, 10K, hill walking, like you say yourself, hill running. I went back hill running this year. That's why my knee's gone. But I think there's a one marathon in everybody, and that should be enough for most people.
You have an incredible legacy, Mary, and an achievement. And look, congratulations on that for, 45 years. not only that, but obviously the money you've raised for charity, but as well, it's the people you've met along the way. Just finish this interview, it's the people you've met for so many years that probably made all this worthwhile.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely, it's the people.
We come to an end of this edition of Settle In and Off the Ball. Settle In brought to you by Guinness 00. Mary Nolan, thank you. Been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time and for your honesty and for your warmth today. And best wishes on the 26th of October. We'll be rooting for you.
Thank you very much. And good luck to everybody else who's going to the start line. We'll see you at the finish line.
Settle In on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Guinness 00.